God, it's just like the host comes in with a cup of coffee.
Got coffee.
Did you ever do The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson?
I did not, and it's one of my great career regrets, because when I got famous enough to get on The Tonight Show, and it was that weird thing that we all go through in our careers where if you stay around long enough, you go through all the various phases of, we love you, you're a genius, you're great, we're kind of tired of you, and we wish you'd go away.
Yeah, I'm getting that now, you know?
Welcome to Literally with me, Rob Lowe. On today's broadcast, I like using the word broadcast, by the way. I know it's a podcast, but I always thought that the old school broadcast made it sound like you were really, like, that you were in show business. So in today's broadcast, I have a gentleman who I think pound for pound, and that's cheating because he's a big man. So when I say pound for pound, he's already kind of ahead of the game. But pound for pound, I think he might be the funniest person in the world. And if you ask people who know comedy in and out, they're not going to dispute it. It's the great, versatile, genius, funny, amazingly sweet Kevin Nealon. Tell me what Carson was like, because I really do feel like I missed out big time.
Well, he was the king. There was nobody else. It was just, that was the late night talk show. You know, it wasn't like it is now where there's like 15 different talk show hosts, you know, and there was the one late night talk show and it's Johnny Carson. And then Letterman came along, but mostly, you know, it was Tonight Show is what you wanted to do if you're a stand-up at least, you know, that kind of validated you.
Well, it made you, right?
It wouldn't make you after one time. It would bring you to attention to a lot of people, but it wouldn't make your career. You have to keep doing them. But I remember when I first moved to Los Angeles, I was about 24. I would go to NBC where they taped the Tonight Show a couple times a week. And I'd go in line and I just go up and down the line, ask anybody had an extra ticket. Because they gave you extra tickets back then. Yeah. And somebody always had an extra ticket. So I would go all the time and watch. It was like going to a Vegas show. Wow. You know, and I knew exactly what they did beforehand. Johnny would come out and talk a little bit. The producer would come out and talk, warm up the audience. I kind of knew each band member, you know, what they played. If somebody wasn't there, I recognized that they weren't there. And so when I finally got on the show, I kind of like knew exactly what was happening. And I only had like 3 days to prepare. They had told me like 3 days before I was going to go on. And I didn't even know what to wear. I saw Ted Danson on there wearing beige pants and a burgundy jacket. I thought that looks pretty cool. And I wore it and I ended up looking like a page, you know? But I remember, when they told me I was going on, all I did was go over my act in my head over and over and over again until, you know, I mean, I could be talking to you now and you would think that I was listening to you, but I was really going over my act in my head. Mm-hmm. And, yep. And so now all of a sudden I'm behind the curtain and the talent coordinator is, pat me on the back, saying, this is it. And I go, yeah. And they come out of commercial and the band stops playing and Johnny, lets out exhales the cigarette smoke and she starts introducing me and I'm going, oh my God, it's happening. It's happening. You know, so many times I've watched this from home and in person. And so they open up the curtain, they're applauding and my mind went blank. I couldn't remember anything. I couldn't remember my act.
No.
Nothing.
No.
Nothing. And I kind of look over to Johnny and nod, I smile, I look at the audience and I stand on my mark. And then when the last clap ends, I remembered my act.
Oh!
I started going into it, and I was removed from myself. I was like a third person watching from another place, and I was killing, and the audience was applauding, and there's applause breaks and laughs. And I could hear Johnny laughing and choking on the smoke, and I finished, and I felt I couldn't. I'm doing the Tonight Show. I did it. And Johnny gives me the okay signal. I go behind the curtain and the talent coordinator goes, hang out. I think Johnny's going to want to talk to you out on panel, you know, which was a real feather in your cap.
He didn't do that for everybody.
No. So he called me over and I came out after the commercial. He sat down and we talked more, got a lot of laughs. And it was probably the highlight of my career ever. Anything other than Weeds or SNL, anything. That was like the highlight of my career.
And What year was this?
That was 84. August of 84. That was back in the 1900s.
Yes, exactly. When there were three channels.
Yeah, yeah.
I just remember that I grew up on Point Doom in Malibu, and Johnny was the first. He and Bob Dylan were the two big celebrities that kind of moved into Point Doom, which was then really just a semi-rural enclave. And
they were a couple at the time, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. They were together. People didn't really. It was on the down low, as the kids say.
Yeah.
But Carson would. I'd see him. He drove a Corvette. I remember. And I'd see him driving around, and he bought this really beloved old family's house and tore it down and made a tennis stadium.
Is it still there?
Yeah, it's still there. Yep, still there right on the cliff.
Is it called Wimbledon?
Yes. It's called Roland Garros, as nice. They would say. First of all, I haven't seen you since we did our walk, your amazing show.
Our little hike, my hiking show, Hiking with Kevin, hashtag Hiking with Kevin. You were fantastic. We had the magic hour.
And whose idea was that?
That was yours.
And
because
yes,
why? Because you're a pro.
Because I know my light.
You know your skin. And also you had some skin products or something you were hawking at the time.
Only at the time.
Yeah, no more.
That was it. I don't do those. That's beneath me. Profile by Rob Lowe. You can go get it online. It's really good shit. Anyway.
Okay.
No, it actually is.
Your skin looks great. How old are you?
I'm 75.
Wow, your skin is like, you really don't have any wrinkles.
I don't have many.
No.
I don't have many. When we were hiking though.
You had a lot.
I knew that the light was going to be good.
Yeah.
And that makes it looked like a Terrence Malick version of your show.
The only person the only guest that had better light than you was Jeff Goldblum, because it was daylight savings and he got lost and the sun went down completely. So it was dark when we hiked.
But it looked good on the camera.
He looked fantastic.
Jeff Goldblum, I just remember I would see him at a gym in Hollywood. Always very impressed because he's jacked. Yes, he's jacked.
Yes. He was jacked. Yes,
ooh, that's good. I like that.
Yeah.
Give me some of that 10 speed and brown shoe shit.
Oh. But I remember hiking with him and I'd say, I say, Jeff, it's getting a little dark out. He goes, spooky.
Spooky.
Oh, is that right? Oh, okay. I don't really do impressions, you know. When I was coming up, At first I thought, you know, I want to do Jimmy Stewart, all those guys, you know, when I was growing up that people were doing. And I would do like a good Jimmy Stewart or John Wayne. But then I started thinking, do I want to be doing impressions of other people or do I want other people to be doing impressions of me?
That's genius.
And it was a big mistake. I should have done impressions.
No, it's not. It's better when you like folded into a conversation like that and people get blown away. They go, wow. Cause I do impressions as well.
You do.
And my wife hates it. She hates when I do impressions. She's like, what are you, Rich Little?
Rich Little.
And I'm like, well, not
Who's
really.
Who's your best impression?
I'd say William Jefferson Clinton.
Oh yeah. That's a good one, man. Now you know, it's interesting cause you know, I watched Dana Carvey do impressions. He's really good at mimicking people, but he does more of a caricature of people. He doesn't do the exact imitation. He'll take it and exaggerate it.
It's like if you ever had like beef bouillon, you know, and you drink it, it's a little soup, but it starts as
a
cube.
Boy, you are really just struggling, aren't you? You're just getting by on groceries.
I remember from my days as a young struggling actor.
As a young Point Doom kid?
As a young Point Doom kid. But like the beef bouillon's from a cube, a little cube you put in water. That's Dana's impersonation, the cube.
Condensed.
Distilled.
Yeah, you got to also kind of watch as they get older, how you do the impressions of them as they get older, you know.
Because they do.
He does a good Jeff Bridges.
Oh my God, that's
an older Jeff Bridges, like the Western guy. Like, I'm having myself a sandwich. I'm being real good sandwich. It's a good corned beef sandwich. But now get back to work. You know, I don't do impressions, but that's like paraphrasing his.
Well, the best is because it's that thing of famous people in there. Well, it's like we were talking about Carson. in their phases, doing impressions of people in the phases of their life. Young Bob Dylan is different than old Bob Dylan. And like my Clinton has evolved as Clinton has gotten older. And I've added in, I know that we're doing a podcast so people can't see me, but he does a face now.
Yeah.
That he never used to do.
And he shakes a little bit now too. Yeah. At that old man face. Yeah. Yeah. He holds it. Have you met him?
I have. I was the first year of the West Wing. We were like shocked that anybody, that the show even worked at all, because you weren't supposed to do a show about politics at all.
And the West Wing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. That's where I know you from. Okay. Now I know you.
You remember that show?
Yeah.
It's just such a little show. We got invited to the White House to meet our real life counterparts. And Clinton came into the Oval Office and we're all really nervous because it's really mind racking when you meet the President of the United States. And but we all didn't know what to say to Clinton, but we didn't need to worry because really all he wanted to do was pitch us ideas of episodes we should be doing.
Yeah. What would that be like?
Well, here's exactly what his pitch was. I remember it. I'm never going to forget it. It was this. You all should do an episode about these young people. They come here to serve their country. They don't make shit. And one day they meet someone from the media and that person just shitboxes them. I was like,
wow.
I'm sorry? What was that? Shitboxes them. I'm not familiar with the term, but I kind of know what it meant. But that was his pitch.
So he was complaining about the media back then too.
Oh, they all do. It's part of the...
And it does have to be hard when the media takes things. But I remember, you know how you meet somebody and you wait to see if they recognize you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I met Clinton about... Well, I was at a fundraiser once. He was speaking at the Sheraton in New York a long time ago. And I was at a table with Carly Simon and my wife and a couple other people. And we were maybe 15 feet away from him. And then on the car ride home with another couple, each person said at the same time, Clinton was looking at me the whole time. He was staring at me. We each thought he was looking at us nonstop.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I did actually meet him two summers ago in Lake Tahoe. He came to this golf tournament I was doing up there. And he came to the players meeting afterwards and he hung out and he talked to everybody and walked around. He stayed for a long time and I walked up to him, and as he's approaching me, I'm walking and I'm waiting. I'm looking at him. You could tell within a couple seconds if somebody recognizes you or not.
Yeah.
And I looked at him. We had eye contact, and I knew within a second and a half he didn't know who I was, you know, or he forgot who I was.
He didn't give you the hey.
No. He was all about Derek Fisher and the athletes.
When you did Hans and Franz, and you were doing that impersonation, did you? How much was Arnold Schwarzenegger actually in your head?
He was totally in our head. We saw him being interviewed in a, we were on tour. Me, Dana Carvey, and Dennis Miller were doing a tour after our first year in SNL. This is in 87.
Who was the grumpiest?
Out of the three of us?
Yeah.
Well, I think you know.
That's why I asked, pup.
I think the grumpy old man.
Yeah, and the feet spark for the feet.
No, we were actually all, nobody was really grumpy. I think we were all like in ecstasy because we were on SNL.
Wait, you're all in ecstasy? Wait, you're all in ecstasy?
Well, we call it two.
Oh, yeah.
So we were in a hotel watching, I was watching Showtime, Arnold Schwarzenegger there interviewing him up close and personal. And I called Dana. I said, you got to watch this. He's so funny, his accent. And for the rest of the tour, we talked like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then the beginning of the next season, we came up with the characters Hans and Franz, two pathetic bodybuilders who never lift a weight in their life.
I have so many things I loved about Hans and Franz, but like one of my favorites was Saturday Night Live does such a good job of on-the-fly special effects with the amount of time they have, really, the makeup and hair. You guys were just stuffing pillows in your sweatpants. I mean, you didn't even try.
Well, that was the big question. Do we make it look so phony?
Right.
You know,
right.
And then we so believe that we're pumped up, you know, or do we try to make it look real? And we thought going the other way, the gray sweatsuit was the better way to go.
Oh, it's so
Good. But Rob, the funniest thing, excuse me, was we did the President's Council on Physical Fitness in the White House when George Bush Sr. was president. And they had different stations on the lawn of different physical fitness stuff. You know, they had like, you know, basketball teams and they had Olympic teams there. And then they had me and Dana on a pedestal and the president, Bush, was coming around and meeting each person. And the way he reacted to Hans and Franz, Arnold is very enthusiastically introducing us. This is Mr. President. This is Hans and Franz. You know, they are perfect embodiment of pompitude. And Bush, and we're talking to Bush. Yeah, look at you, Mr. President. You know, you're a pathetic girly man. And he looked at us, and I think he thought, I really think he thought we were part of the Special Olympics team. You know what I mean? No, nothing against the Special Olympics, but I think he thought that we were kind of, you know, missing something.
That.
And Arnold had explained to him, these are the guys that are on Saturday Night Live and they do the things like this, you know, the funny comments.
No. The funny comment. Have you ever had to do your, because I'm longtime friends with Arnold. And in fact, Maria has been on the show, Shriver, his ex-wife. And I know the family really well and everybody knows I do an Arnold, but I've never done it for him. In fact, I'm petrified. Petrified. Have you ever had to...
We do Hans and Franz in front of him all the time, and that's basically a caricature of him, you know? You know, I've heard a lot of comedians tell jokes, but I remember doing a Planet Hollywood opening with him once, and he went out there, and, you know, I guess somebody wrote him some jokes, and he goes, you know, my wife just had some plastic surgery. I cut up her credit cards.
He can make anything work, Arnold, with that voice.
Yeah, and then he just tags it with, you know, something like that.
And these kind of things.
Yeah. I was skiing in Sun Valley once a long time ago, and I ran into him, and we took a couple of runs together. And all the way up the chairlift, he would just be talking about how great the burn was in the quads. That you feel the burn in the quads from the, you know, from the giant slalom, you know, down the double diamonds, you know, it's just like a fire in your quads.
And it's really good because, you know, it helps you when you go later and you want energy when you go to work.
Work, yeah.
Work with that, yeah, with the weird
work,
R in there.
Work. So, yeah, you have a really good, I mean, you do Lorne Michaels too. I remember you did that on Wayne's World.
Never done it for him so much.
Never. Wouldn't,
do you think Dr. Evil was based on me, Rob? No, Lorne, no. Absolutely not. It's Blofeld.
Really? You know, I was laying in bed last night with my son. He's 13, and he's about ready to go to bed, and I just want to watch something on TV. And, you know, and he's at that age now where he's kind of getting into, like, he just finished watching The Office, all 8 seasons of it, mm-hmm. and now he's watching The Simpsons, you know. And I said, Gable, let's watch a couple of James Bond movies, the old ones. You know, because at the beginning, there's always like a big chase scene. You know, there's a lot of action at the beginning. And it went back to like Sean Connery, like Goldfinger, nothing.
Nothing,
it was
right?
Like nothing. Some kind of a card game and some girls looking through the binoculars. I said, okay, well, that's not it. There's a ski chase somewhere. So he had to Google it.
Yeah, that one's on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the George Lansby James Bond.
Yeah,
They gave him one shot at Bond, and that was it. I remember in the 80s when I was doing a lot of drugs and drinking a ton, the MGM studio had a new president and invited a bunch of people to his mansion and to announce the new James Bond. And yeah. I went, and I got it in my head somehow, paranoid, that it was me.
Oh.
And that...
I had the same feeling.
An elaborate ruse. It wasn't me, by the way.
It wasn't you.
No.
It could have been you, now that I think about it.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, it is so, like, you cannot even talk to them about playing Bond. They won't have it. Like, you have to be some version of English. But I'm like, you know, English people play Americans all the time, and we don't get all crazy uppity about it.
No.
So why couldn't an American play James Bond? And honestly, it is like verboten.
It would be funny if I tried to audition for the next James Bond. That would be like Farley auditioning for the Chippendale sketch with Patrick Swayze.
Oh, it'd be so genius.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
I heard a story about your first time on, speaking of Lorne, that Lorne had like words of wisdom for you, the very first thing you ever did SNL or something like this.
So, well,
it's the most brilliant Lorne story ever.
Well, it's very atypical of Lorne, something he would say. It's his sense of humor. I'm getting ready to go on to do my first sketch, and we're coming back from commercial, and it's Mr. Subliminal, the sketch, you know, where you're doing like a double conversation. So it's a little bit of a tongue twister. So I'm really trying to focus and get ready and, you know, steel myself to be ready to do my first SNL sketch live, you know. And 5 seconds away from commercial coming back, he puts his hand on my shoulder and he goes, "Are you sure this is what you want?" But that's like typical Lorne right there, you know. I mean, I thought that was funny. I thought it was funny and it kind of relaxed me, you know.
I have to tell you, everybody does Lorne. Everybody loves Lorne, but I think you might have my favorite Lorne because you bring a baritone to it.
Oh, the impression? Well, you know what? Yeah. Have you talked to him lately?
No, I haven't.
You know, we're all getting older, and right. I think everybody's voice gets a little more gravelly as they get older.
You like this now? Is that what Lorne talks like now?
No, it's more... Rob, I think...
Now it's Jimmy Stewart.
Rob, everybody becomes Jimmy Stewart at a certain age. That's what I'm saying.
I wanted to... When I was on Parks and Recreation, Amy Poehler...
That's where I know you from.
Thank you. Thank you. there are certain people in life that if you work for them, you're in their orbit. It's like being in, it's like, what is it? Stockholm syndrome, where you fall in love with your captor. And Lorne is one of those people. Like if you've worked with him, he lives in your head forever. And so Amy and I used to, you know, do Lorne quotes together. And we were going to open a Twitter account of a fake Lorne Michaels Twitter account because we had so many insane quotes.
Right.
And then we thought, oh, he'll find out. So we didn't do it. So instead, I'm just going to say it. I'm just going to say him on the podcast. Fuck it. I don't care anymore.
So, you know, you were on Wings. I mean, West Wing.
Wings. And, yes. And Steven Weber. Yeah.
Now you were on West Wing and you were on Parks and Rec.
Yes.
I mean, you were on a lot of shows. You hosted SNL a lot. Do you think you've had it easy as an actor to get jobs?
What's funny, there's what you think and then there's the reality. And what I think is it's been sort of tough sometimes, easy sometimes, great sometimes, hard sometimes. But the reality is, over the course of 40 years, not only have I always worked, but I have had it, my own show on television for 20 consecutive years.
What do you mean your own show?
Starting in 1999 with The West Wing.
Right.
Every year I've had a show a show.
And then we did that pilot. I mean.
And then we did a pilot. Yeah.
We did the tennis pilot. But
I loved it. I loved we did a pilot.
That was great.
So guys, we did a show called The Pro and it was me and Rob Riggle as ridiculous, ne'er-do-well.
You're like the Hans and Franz of tennis pros.
Yeah. And you were like the owner of the Ted Knight of Caddyshack. Yeah. I love that show.
That was good. But was that an easy sell for you for a pilot like that to convince a network? Because you're a good bet, I mean, to go into something because you have high TVQ and people like you.
It's funny. Thanks. I mean, TV has been really, really good to me. And I started working in it before it became cool. I mean, when we started on West Wing, you know, TV was still considered somehow less than the movie business. And, you know, now today it's the inverse is, you know, that's TV is where all the great writing is. It's all anybody ever talks about. And nobody ever talks about what movies.
All of a sudden, nobody's saying there's nothing good on TV anymore.
It's too much on TV.
I mean, it's too much now. It's like it takes a pandemic like this to catch up on shows.
That's, I know, and I'm grateful for the pandemic for that.
I mean, you got to give it some props, you know.
I mean, how else am I going to really know about The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
I'm finally watching, I've never watched The Wire, and that's on my docket. I'm going to watch that next week.
But, okay, do you ever have this? Because I was talking about The Wire to somebody recently, and, you know, and that is like one of the holy grails of TV drama way ahead of its time. Do you ever finally make your way to something and you go, yeah, sure. Yeah, no, yeah, yeah. And that's it.
Yeah.
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 You know what? I'm looking at you right now, and I got to say, your chin looks just like Michael Jackson's chin.
Dude. Dude. No.
I know. I saw you on Matt Spade the other day.
Oh, God, you saw, yeah. He, God damn it. I took that like a fish. I took the bait. No, I'm pretty sure.
But it is true. It does look just like it.
It's a combination of years of human growth hormone. You know, I started when I was 15. Mm-hmm. And you know, you do human growth hormone, you know, starting as a teenager, and your chin will be huge, like mine.
You did work out for a while. You were on the cover of some magazine, I remember, and I thought, wow, Rob got himself into good shape there.
Yeah, I was 47. It was Men's Fitness, and I was like,
that's right.
Which is ironic because I spent like a decade going, I will not take my shirt off. I will not be objectified. I am more than the way I look. Yeah. And then I started facing down 50. I'm like, fuck it. Let's go. Let's use it or lose it, baby.
I remember I had publicists once and I said, I would love to be on the cover of Men's Fitness. And I'm going to get myself in a really good shape this summer. So if you could line that up for me, that would be great. Thank God they didn't line it up for me because it didn't go anywhere.
Well, I love the Men's Fitness cover because they're the guys who clearly like took it really seriously like I did. And then the guys who just show up in a t-shirt and like, yeah, this is me. I'm on the cover. What the fuck do you want from me?
Yeah. This is me naturally.
Yeah. That's like the Brad Pitt move. It was like, I'm Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
I'm in a t-shirt and you're going to like it. That's the way it is. You don't get to see my abs. It's not happening.
Or they'll put someone like Hugh Jackman on the cover.
Oh, that guy.
Who?
I mean, he's an animal. Literally, he's a Wolverine. He is an actual animal.
He is an animal. Yeah, he's an animal.
He's an actual animal.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever seen Hugh on stage do his...
No.
Because like he looks like the Wolverine, but meanwhile, he's like, let me entertain you. And you're like, wait.
Yeah. It's like a singing wolf.
Yeah, it's a whole thing that you just, you
is
know.
Is he English? I think he's Australian.
He's Aussie, one of the great guys.
Aussie.
He's got every club in the bag, as they say. Somebody was talking about an actor the other day, some big agent to me said, I don't think he's a big star. He's a one club guy.
I was like, what's that? One club.
He's a one club guy. Yeah, a big movie star. He's a one club guy. And they said, now Matt Damon, he's got all the clubs.
That was the thing about being on SNL is after a while, you ran out of clubs. And Lauren knew it. He said, that's all the clubs you got in your bag right there. It's all the tricks.
Well, like Brando says, an actor only has so many faces.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a friend of mine ran into him in a market once, and he was buying TV dinners. And my friend said to Brando, are you ever going to act again? He goes, no. He says, I've run out of faces.
Ah. I remember Ed Begley Jr. was telling me about a movie I think he did with Brando. And he said how Brando came the second day of the shooting and he had his own street clothes on and they told him he had to get into costume. And he was just so appalled that over the minutia of having to match costumes in the scene.
I was at a, do you remember that restaurant? How long have you lived in LA? A long time,
40 years.
Right?
40 years.
There was that like 5-star, really fancy French.
Maison?
No, it was on La Cienega. It was after Mamaison. I forget what the hell it was called. It was like, it took forever. It took 3 hours to eat there. And anyway, I was eating there and I heard behind me some guy asking the waiter, what is this flavor in this? It's like jalapeno. And I was like, it's fucking, I just knew. I didn't even need to turn around.
Yeah.
And there he was in all his glory with like, it looked like Tahitian tourist with Instamatic cameras.
Wow.
On the table.
Yeah.
And that was as close as I got to Brando.
Do you ever have friends come out, like childhood friends from Dayton, because you're from Dayton, right?
Yeah, from Ohio, yeah.
And did they ever embarrass you around celebrities? Like I
was... That's what my dad's for.
Oh, your dad does that. I was, I went to the Soho House in Malibu a couple years ago. My friend was out, Bill from Connecticut. Bill grew, he was a fireman all his life. He comes out with his girlfriend, East Coast, you know.
Yeah, I know the type.
And you know, you forget that people get so excited when they see a celebrity sometimes.
Yeah.
And we were at this, it was a buffet, and we're sitting at our table, and there's people in line, and at the buffet is Diana Ross.
What? Well, listen, that's a whole other level.
And my friend and his girlfriend, loud, so the whole room, Barb, that's Diana Ross right there. That's Diana Ross. I'm like, Bill, come on. Yeah, she's getting eggs right now. She's getting eggs. That's from the Supremes, Diana Ross right there.
She's getting eggs.
Yeah.
She eats eggs.
But yeah, it's fun.
I get that way.
I do sometimes too.
When I met Robert Redford.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, what? I mean, and Diana Ross is another perfect example. When I met her, there's just some people that are, well, everybody is a fan of somebody, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I got to meet Paul McCartney at Lauren's. I had a great little lunch over at Lorne Michaels, and Paul McCartney was there. And it was like, you can't believe. Listen, the minute you stop being a fan of people is the minute you need to get out of the business.
I saw Jack Lemmon once. You probably saw him around in Malibu. I saw him once at the crossroads at the little mall there. He was crossing the green by the playground. He was kind of in a hurry. And I said, hey, Jack, how you hitting him? Because I know he played golf. And he looked up, he kind of looked up off to the side. He goes, good, thanks, good. You know, he walked on. I thought, wow, I just had a conversation with Jack Lemmon.
He's one of the great actors of all time, man.
But you know what? It's funny. You drive around Malibu and you just happen to see people. Like I saw Eddie Arnold from
Green Acres.
Yeah. Is that Eddie Arnold?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, he was on my road. I used to rent a house over the Cross Creek Mall there on the hillside. And he was on the road leaning against the front of his car waiting for somebody and driving by. And I thought, oh, my God, that's Green Acres right there.
I when I was a kid, I moved to Malibu in 1976. And I was a huge Saturday Night Live fan. And I went to the beach one day and there was Chevy.
Oh, wow.
Like, and I'll never forget. He was. Remember, he looked like an Adonis in those
days.
Yeah,
still does.
And he was staring at the water and mumbling to himself, and it went on for an hour.
Wow.
And I watched it.
This is before cell phones, so he wasn't talking on his cell phone.
He was not talking. You know what else I used to go to in Malibu?
What?
Ready for this one?
Yeah.
Battle of the Network Stars.
Oh yeah, but Pepperdine.
Pepperdine dolphin shorts. Yes.
Yeah. $6 million man.
It was the greatest. It was like, to me, it was like the Super Bowl on steroids. It was the greatest event. And it was that little monkey, Christy McNichol, she would just shellack people. Shellack. Yeah. And Mark Herman, he was the other guy.
Well, you know what the answer to that is now is American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah, but nobody's famous.
That's true. Well, they should have a celebrity one.
Well, I've thought about it, but the thing is those people were legitimate stars. They were legitimately the biggest stars.
They were.
They really were. And there were only three networks, and they all showed up, and it was really competitive. Now, you're not going to get...
They tried to get that going again last year.
You would never have gotten in the day James Gandolfini on the Tug of War versus Martin Sheen versus Bryan Cranston... versus Johnny Galecki. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. And then the other day we were just driving, we got off to drive to get out of the house, and we drove through the parking lot at that grocery store in Malibu by Coogies, where Coogies used to be.
Yeah.
And my wife goes, oh my God, there's Peter Graves. Gable.
No way.
Said that we were just watched Airplane recently. there's the guy, the pilot right
there's
there.
There's no way Peter Graves is alive.
And I said to my wife, and my wife is fumbling for her phone. She's going to go take a picture, you know? And I said, I don't think that's Peter Graves. I mean, it looks like him, but I think, didn't he die like 10 years ago? So she's getting her camera ready and oh my God. And she's reciting his lines. And I said, Suze, I think he's dead. I think Peter Graves is dead. And I Google him. Sure enough, he died like 10 years ago. And then all of a sudden we wanted nothing to do with this old man.
I used to see James Garner, who, by the way, I always think people always say who has a career that you emulate and that you admire. I think James Garner's pretty much of a stud, movie star, TV star.
What about Tom Hanks, though?
Well, but Hanks is the president.
But that's a career right there. Oh. He could have anybody's career.
Yeah, no, for sure. But that's like a one in a billion. I mean, he's so fucking amazing.
Gary Busey, those two guys. Hanks and Busey.
Yeah. Do you do a Tom Hanks impersonation?
No. I can't.
There he is, the Kevin Nealon. He's the one you love. Aunt in front, and he is here. He is the man, Kevin Nealon.
You know, the very first sitcom I ever went to out here to watch was Bosom Buddies.
Oh, my God.
And it was
God.
Tom Hanks. I think it was the pilot. And Peter Scolari. And I remember watching, thinking, oh, okay, so they're dressed up like women. And then I remember watching it on TV, like, you know, a year later, and they were dressed like women. I think, that's the episode I saw. They're just like women. That was the episode I saw. And every time I saw, I said,
wait,
that's the same episode I saw. They're showing it again. I didn't realize every week they dressed like women.
It just goes to show you, anybody can start somewhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, I know it.
I mean, your first jobs don't mean anything, really. You know, it's a first job is a first job. Tom's, you know, he was a sitcom actor and he's the greatest, you know, movie star we have, which is great. I love that, that people don't get pigeonholed.
Do you feel like you haven't done that film yet? Because you've had a lot of success in TV and film. And earlier in the film, you know, you did the Rat Pack stuff and what was it? The Rat Pack?
The Brat Pack. But
Brat Pack,
yes.
Yeah.
I'll take it. I'll take it either way. Rat, it's all the same to me.
You did those kinds of movies. But now are you kind of like thinking, man, it'd be really nice to be in a really great movie?
It would be great. And I don't think I've had that seminal movie part in a while. Although Behind the Candelabra was...
That's where I know you from.
That was a part of a lifetime, but
yeah.
Yeah, that would be fun. I mean, it would be fun to
or
to
even
have
like
that
a thing. Western or something.
Oh,
right?
I would love to do a Western.
Yeah.
I would love.
Or even like, you know, 1917 or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny. I don't get this anymore, but I got it forever. It was like, "Oh, you can't play that because you don't look like a cop," people would say to me or whatever. I'd be like, what? I don't look like a cop. Okay. And then ironically, on my new show, I play a fire captain and I would never have been able to have played that even 10 years ago. They would just be like, oh, no, but no firemen look like you. I'm like, well,
that's funny.
Fuck?
You know, that's funny you should say that because I remember seeing an ad for your show where you're playing a fireman. It was just so funny because it's like Rob could do anything. You know, he'll always work. He'll be a fireman. Then he'll be in an ER room somewhere. And then the next show, he'll be like, you know, a serial killer.
No, I'm working my way. I'm doing fireman now. I'm working my way through all of the iterations of the Village People. Like it's construction worker is going to be the next role.
And it's not like I'm even shaking my head going, oh man, it's guys. It's just like, I'm thinking, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
I remember I was represented by Mike Ovitz at one point and he was like the biggest agent in the history of Hollywood. And I remember him we were talking about movies and I wanted to do this movie or that movie or whatever. And he said, listen, you need to worry about any of that stuff because your insurance policy will always be television. I was like, what? Well, he was right. And it's great. It's like, the other thing is people react to you differently if you're on TV versus movies. Have you found that? Have you ever noticed the difference?
Well, I haven't really done a lot of like films. I mean, I've done a lot of parts in Sandler films, but I've never like.
Like you said, you haven't done a lot of films. Yes.
Right.
I get, no, I'm just kidding. Yeah. Kidding. I love those movies. Those movies are riveting.
No, they're fun to do. They're a lot of fun to do.
No, yeah. Listen, I want to do movies that are completely predicated around what hotel you want to shoot them in. It'd be amazing.
I know. It'd be great. I stayed in Le Bristol Hotel in Paris.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And that's where they shot Midnight in Paris, Woody Allen. So on the loop, on the TV, is a constant loop of Midnight in Paris, the movie. You know, and I did a hike with Owen Wilson. He goes, yeah, we stayed out there at the hotel. That's where we stayed. I said, I know it, man. And, you know, I had jet lag one night and I was watching Midnight in Paris. I'd seen it already. And when it got to the steps, you know, where you're waiting for the car, I thought, I'm going to go find those steps tonight. So I Googled where they were. And it was like an hour and a half walk from that hotel. And I walked there like at 3 a.m. and I just sat on the steps. And wouldn't you know it, a car showed up. And I went back in time.
And we'll be right back after this.
You know, I was just looking at you and...
This is a podcast.
I know, but I could see you on the screen. But I for a minute I thought Rob Lowe could also have done the Joker.
Ooh, then the lighting must be horrible that you're looking at me with.
No, I mean, it's just the way you kind of reeled back a little bit and your jaw stuck out. There you go. Yeah, think about that.
How's that?
Think about that. I like it, man.
How's that?
That's great, man.
That's great. When you did Update.
Yeah.
By the way, wasn't there an Update reunion recently? Amongst all the SNL things?
On the on Spade. Spade had me and
that's
Norm
right.
and Dennis.
It was great. That's where I saw it. That was awesome.
That was fun. And then Colin, I think, called in or something.
Other than yourself, because you're a genius in it, who is, can you and will you tell me who your favorite Update person is? And don't say Chevy.
I've said this before. It's, you know, the Weekend Update is kind of the pivotal point of that show. You know, it's on it. Comes on at about 12:30, I think, or 12.
Oh, no. Update is the thing where people either bail or Update is great and they stay.
Yeah. But that is each person that did that, whether they did it alone or with somebody, brings their own personality to it and style. And, you know, I went to this Chevy Chase school of Weekend Update because he was the first one. And I watched him at the time. And that's who I thought, you know, I thought that's the way I like to do it.
Yeah.
You know, Dennis did a great, you know, Dennis did himself basically, which was great. Norm brought a whole different style to it. I like Norm. I like watching Norm do anything because he's so unpredictable.
Oh,
and
he's so
you know,
funny.
You just don't, it's like almost sometimes watching a train wreck.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, for sure.
And he's just, he's really an interesting personality. So I kind of like, I like the way Norm did it. And I mean, everybody brings their own thing to it. You know, I like, I just like, you know, when I did it, it was more of like the dry Weekend Update guy. I wasn't doing my personality or commenting myself on something, you know, like throwing the sides out. You know, it was just more doing the news story and then moving on.
Who is the worst host you worked with? Worst host.
Besides you?
Besides me. That's right. We did the show together. I did the show with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody asks who the worst host was. And a lot of people say Steven Seagal.
Yes.
But,
that's what everybody
says. I feel bad for the hosts because most of them are so terrified because they're doing live television.
Terrified. Yeah.
And so I really don't judge them that much. You know, I just kind of feel for them. You know, some of them have never done live before. You know, they're movie actors. Yeah. And they're terrified. And, you know, so it's, you know, it's kind of, I enjoy like Steve Martin when he's on and Bill Murray and Tom Hanks was always great. And Alec Baldwin.
Alec's so good.
Yeah. How many times did you host that show?
3.
That's amazing.
And loved it every single time. It's so good. I think Alec is my favorite
multi-version. Yeah, yeah. Anybody ever ask you what your favorite movie is of all time?
My favorite movie of all time, just my gut, like, it's hard to say because I've got a lot of, it might be Goodfellas.
You know, I when people ask me that question, I feel like I should give them a better answer, like a Goodfellas or The Godfather or, you know, or Casablanca.
Citizen Kane.
Yeah. But the movie that really moved me the most, maybe because it was my age when I went to see it, was Rocky.
Yeah.
Listen, I mean, I just, it was so uplifting for me. And it was the underdog, you know, wins at the end, sort of.
I saw it opening weekend in Westwood. I remember vividly where I was. That theater went ballistic.
I know, right?
That fight.
I mean, is it like embarrassing to say that's your favorite movie?
No, what's embarrassing is to go back and watch it and see that when they're fighting, there's no one there. And then at other angles, it's full of people.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they just didn't care. I showed
my 13-year-old, well, he was 11 at the time, a couple of years ago, I showed him Rocky. And he thought it was Matt LeBlanc, who I'm doing a show with on Man with a Plan on CBS. He goes, "Is that Matt LeBlanc?" No, they sound the same, though.
Matt LeBlanc as Rocky would be great. Did you ever do Friends? You didn't do a Friends episode, did you?
No, but my wife did. She did a scene with Joey, who I work with now. And Friends was so long ago. It's like Matt's a different person now. You know, I look at Friends of Joey then. I think, yeah, I can see the resemblance. Somewhere. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, talk about TV. I think any of those people on Friends, well, you see Jennifer Aniston doing films, but a lot of them are so typecasted as, you know, being on Friends. I think it's hard for them to get film work.
Yeah, it's, I love that. That cast is an extraordinary cast.
I see you in a spy movie.
Yeah, I want to do a spy movie.
But you're not the spy. You working for the administration, and you're the one who kind of screws things up.
How about 3 Days of the Condor remake?
Yeah.
So I like that. Would you be down for that?
I would be down for anything.
I'm looking at your artwork right now, dude. Your artwork is insane.
Thank you.
It's really good. What the hell? What?
I love doing it.
What do you do?
Well, what happened, Rob, was I've always drawn. You know, as on SNL, we did the table reads. You know, sometimes they can last a long time, as you know, and you get bored. And I would sketch whoever was across the table from me, whether it's Farley or the host.
Really?
Or,
oh, please tell me you kept them.
Oh yeah, I have them. I think
you have to publish that.
It's on my Instagram. It's Kevin Nealon artwork.
Okay. No way. He
might be in there. I'm not sure. But anyway, I did Farley and Franken and all these people. Jim Downey.
And, amazing.
And then so I always loved doing caricatures of people, and I just did them on paper with pencils, you know, and just black and white. And then a friend suggested I color them in. So I started coloring them in. And then I was sitting at LAX airport, as opposed to LAX restaurant. And, I saw this guy gave art classes on Instagram. He was a caricature artist and I liked his work and he lives in England. So I would Skype with him once a week. And he would critique my work and give me instructions. And I learned how to draw on a tablet, a Wacom Cintiq digital tablet. So that's what I do it on now.
Whoa.
And it's really cool because it's like painting. And you have all these special effects you could do. And so that's what I've been doing lately.
That's amazing. So that's why you're obsessed with my chin.
Well, it's funny. When I look at people now, I'm looking at them like caricatures.
That's what exactly.
Seeing, yeah, like if I did you, it would be the chin, and also you're between your nose and your top lip is interesting. It's very smooth, and it seems to be more space there than most people have.
Between my top lip and my nose, right here.
Yeah, you have a thin top lip, and your face is square, and your chin is strong. And of course you got a good head of hair. So it's really hard to do people that have like good, features as a caricature.
What do you do? What do those guys do? Do you think when somebody sits in front of them and they've got like a horrendous nose or something, do they like, oh, I mean, are they honest?
A good caricature artist will be, he'll be honest about it. I remember once I was in Europe, I was in, San Marco Plaza in Venice. Mm-hmm. And you know how they had a street artist there?
Yeah.
And there was this guy sketching this New York, Long Island Jewish woman. And he was being very generous. He was being really, it wasn't a caricature, it was a portrait.
Yes, exactly.
And I remember walking away thinking, well, she's going to like that. And then about 15 minutes later, all the way across the plaza, I heard her yelling at the guy, "That doesn't look like me at all."
So the lesson is, if you go to a caricature artist and you get a portrait and not a caricature, you need to go see a plastic surgeon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or you get a portrait, do you think it's a caricature?
Yeah, you know? Either way, it's not good.
Yeah, yeah.
Has there ever been a cartoon character or that you've been sexually attracted to?
Porky Pig, originally.
Yeah, because he's wearing clothes on the top and he's nude on the bottom. Sure.
And it's the heels. I think it's the hoofs.
The hoofs look like heels.
Yeah, yeah. And there was also a cartoon I remember as a child. I was really kind of, I mean, it's the first time I think I felt sexual feelings. It was an automated belt, like an assembly line thing, where they put the diapers on with these automatic hands and you go through and then they powder you and stuff. And I thought, that's kind of sexy. The automated hands, and then they powdered your butt. They lifted your legs up and powdered your butt, and then they slapped a diaper on you. And I thought, I could be into that.
Oh.
To this day, still. Did I tell you how much I love your brother, Chad?
I know.
Not to change the subject, but he's such a good guy. He lives right down the street from me.
And you're the mayor. Weren't you the honorary mayor?
Well, I was the honorary mayor of the Palisades for 2 years. Yep.
What did you institute? Anything? What laws?
Well, I installed cameras in all the yogurt shops to make sure people weren't just taking samples and not buying.
And Patrick Schwarzenegger was arrested.
He was arrested the next day. Also he's still in prison.
Yeah, he's a horrible, horrible criminal of taking free things from yogurt places.
Yeah. But I seem to be the honorary person. I was the honorary mayor of the Palisades for 2 years. And now my alma mater for the last 2 years has invited me to get my honorary doctorate.
That's amazing. That's awesome.
Nobody wants to give me the real thing.
No.
They want to give me the honorary thing.
I'll take any award however they give it to me.
I've never gotten a lot of awards until lately, the honorary award stuff. But I've never gotten I think I got nominated for a Golden Globe and maybe an Emmy when I was on SNL for writing. But that was it.
I'm worried when too much of that stuff starts coming your way, they're worried about your health.
Oh, yeah. Like a Lifetime Achievement Award?
Yeah. They're basically saying, we think you're going to die.
You worry about that? You worry about dying?
I'll tell you what else I worry about. Whenever I shoot a scene where I'm walking through a doorway, I feel like that's the clip from my In Memoriam that I've just shot.
Really? I see you living a long time.
Me too.
You just seem like you have the genes. Like I said, you just seem lucky in every way.
luck is earned, kid. Luck is the nexus of opportunity and hard work.
You probably eat healthy.
I do.
You don't do drugs anymore. You don't drink that much.
No, I don't do any of that stuff.
You exercise.
I do it all. But I do obsess about shit that I shouldn't obsess about.
So stressfully, you're wearing yourself out.
Well, I don't think it's a good sign that I'm thinking about what my In Memoriam clip is. I also don't think it, because then I go, well, so would it be, I've been around a long time, so would it be two clips? Like, is it me and the Outsiders when I'm like young and cute and then like the most recent thing where I'm old?
I think it would be probably the Brat Pack, the Outsiders. It would be probably definitely West Wing and probably Parks and Rec, and that would be it.
So I get three clips.
Well, over different programs.
Usually, dude, Henry Fonda, fucking was him turning around in front of a haystack or something. That was the end of it for him.
They had him on Golden Pond. Golden Pond, too.
They did. They had him in the Bad Hat and Golden Pond, and then they had him Tom Joad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think about that shit.
Yeah. I don't think about that.
Sometimes I'll actually go over to the script supervisor. And I'll be like, hey, can you print takes 1, 2, and 3 and make a note of when I turned around at the desk and sent it to the Academy. Because that, I think that would be really good for my...
You know, there's a word for that. You know what the word is?
Narcissist?
Narcissist. Who do you think's nicer, you or Chad?
Chad. I've got more edge than Chad Lowe. I don't say that proudly, but he's way nicer than me.
Yeah, I would say so too.
Yeah. Chad Lowe is the nicest man in show business, one of them.
Yeah.
He's a really good director. He's going to direct a bunch of 911 Lone Stars.
Oh, good for him, man. Good for him.
Yeah, he's good. He loves you. Loves you. He and his wife love them some Kevin Nealon, as do I.
Same, man. The Lowe's are a good family. Your father, I remember meeting your father at Chad's wedding. He is such the debonair kind of a guy from Dayton, Ohio. Like the white, he wears those shirts that have the white collars.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
The ties.
100%. I mean, that is my dad. He is the most debonair guy from Dayton, Ohio that you will ever meet.
Yeah. And when I saw him, I thought, that makes sense. Yeah, that could be their father. Yeah.
He's got the chin.
He's got the square head.
Square head. He's the most square-headed debonair of Dayton, Ohio.
I don't mean square head. I mean chiseled. Chiseled.
Well, there's a little bit of a difference with square head and chiseled. I don't go into the makeup trailer and go, hey, could you just square my head more? I'll be like, can you chisel me more?
Would it be a compliment to you if you knew of everybody, you know, we talked about Michael Jackson, but everybody that went to a plastic surgeon and said, I want Rob Lowe's nose or his chin or his lips?
That would be kind of radical. I do know that there was, because I read about it once, that there was a moment in time where there was people were asking for, it's like the Jennifer Aniston haircut, when that was a thing. They were asking for the Rob Lowe chin.
Oh,
and
right.
And that's when I think Michael got it. Jackson, really do. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think you're right.
No, because I knew him, you know, and I knew him through that era. And I worked with his sister Janet on a sitcom back in the day. But that's for another episode.
That's where I know you from.
Yeah, I don't give away all my nuggets just because I have Kevin Nealon on the podcast. So good. All right, Nealon, this has been great. I literally am going to pee my pants. We've talked so long and it's been so good. But you know that whole diaper thing you were talking about? I may need to wear one the next time we talk because we go for days. And it's good. We could do another 2 hours of this.
Yeah. You'll edit it down to 5 minutes and you'll have a nice little podcast there.
But I want to do we need to do part two because this was really, really fun.
Oh, we haven't even touched the tip of the iceberg.
We haven't. I haven't done a deep dive on what you were clearly into sexually with powder and diapers. Kevin, I love you.
I love you,
Rob.
Thank
you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
All right, buddy.
How funny was that? How funny is that man? Ridiculous. Oh, my God. What a great talk. Anyway, thanks for listening and more to come. Thanks.
You have been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe. Produced and engineered by me, Devin Torrey Bryant. Executive produced by Rob Lowe for Low Profile. Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco. And Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Stitcher. The supervising producer is Aaron Blair. Talent producer, Jennifer Samples. Please rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts. And remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.